This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
Let's move over to Sandra Birchmore. Dateline just did a special on this the other night. If you've not watched it and you want to kind of get caught up on this case, you know, it's a good kind of entry level place to go in and kind of get a general understanding of what's going on here. She was just 23 years old. She was pregnant and excited about her future when she was found dead in her Canton, Massachusetts apartment in February of 2021. At first, her death was ruled a suicide, but the truth was far darker. For over a decade, Sandra had been groomed and sexually exploited by Stoughton police officer Matthew Farwell, allegedly, starting when she was only 14 years old, and entangled with other members of the department as well. Those other entanglements allegedly happened after she was 18. Because, oh, that makes it so much better. Just weeks before she died, Sandra told Farwell she was carrying his child. Prosecutors now say Farwell strangled her and staged the scene to look like a suicide, silencing her forever to protect himself. 3 years later, the FBI charged Farwell with murder, accusing him not just of abuse, but of covering his tracks with the knowledge of someone trained in law enforcement. Other officers connected to Sandra, Farwell's twin brother, William, Deputy Chief Robert Devine, and Animal Control Officer Joshua Heal have been forced out of policing or face decertification, though only Matthew Farwell now stands accused of the murder. Sandra's story is not just about her tragic death, but it's about the systematic abuse that was going on and what went on to protect it and allowed it to fester for so long. Bob, I know you've been following this along with many other stories in that part of the country, as it seems that there's a lot of intermingling of cast members here. Let's go all the way back to Farwell for folks who don't know much about this case, and all the way back to the Police Explorer program. What's the earliest we know about their interactions?
I mean, it started when she was very young, and she got into the Police Explorer program, which is, you know, kind of a community outreach program that I think in the minds of law enforcement is kind of selling the concept of maybe becoming a cop when you're older, you know, and it's an outreach to the community as well. And they encourage kids to come in. And in that program, you're interacting with police. They're showing you some kind of basic procedural stuff. And, you know, you're building a rapport with your local law enforcement agency. So that was how Sandra was introduced into this whole situation. And, you know, from there, it just got really, really scary and ugly.
Yeah. And I mean, this abuse went on for years. Eventually, the parents are the ones who said, wait a second, we don't think her death was a suicide. And they called it out in the form of a civil lawsuit, which then eventually got the feds involved because, hey, local law enforcement wasn't investigating it because they were involved in it.
Yeah.
Let's go to the nexus of that, of how this went on for so many years. And in this case specifically, were there any signs? Did anybody realize that the abuse was taking place prior to her turning 18?
I would have to think so. I think it's impossible for somebody to groom somebody of that age if you have parents that are paying attention at all. All I can do as a parent of four children is look at things through my own lens and think about whether or not something like that happening over years would fall off my radar, or I wouldn't be like, why is this guy communicating with you? Why are you meeting this grown man various times that don't seem to make it? I'd be all over it. But, you know, in terms of other people that were within the program with her, and I'm talking about kids her age, all the way to the other officers that were working in that program, I think it's highly unlikely, don't you, that no one had any idea that this kind of grooming was going on? I mean, when you see an inappropriate relationship, you know, I mean, I think all of us, when we're like, you'll kind of like first, if you see, if it's somebody you don't know, but you kind of see something and you're like, wow, that seems weird. You know, it's like, it's either that guy is like that kid's daughter, or, and if they look to be kind of interacting in a way that goes beyond normal parent child interaction in terms of affection, and it, it happens to be somewhere you see it, you notice it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we all do.
Well, you hope you notice it. And I think a lot of us do notice it, but I feel like a lot of people don't notice it. And that's what I wonder about. I mean, a case like this, and I'm not trying to cast any sort of negativity on the family or anything like that, because they're victims here, obviously, too, of all of this. But when you see this member of the community, so a police officer, you know, police explorer program, you think, okay, well, this is a good thing. And in a lot of cases, it is. This sort of things don't happen everywhere. But when it does happen, and you see the officer Farwell, who went above and beyond, you know, is what it's going to be looked at as, oh, he's above and beyond. He's really trying to help this girl out, showing up to the library, help her study, do this or that outside of the police explorer program. Nobody's seeing this as weird. I mean, the guy's in his like what, mid-20s at this point. She's like 14 or something. That's not normal. There's not mid-20-some-year-old, upper 20-some-year-old men going to the library to help 14-year-old study. Other reason other than they want something inappropriate, unless it's like your brother. I don't really see any reason why anyone I don't see how one wouldn't look at that, even if you have the purest of intentions, that you wouldn't go, people might look at this as being something weird. I shouldn't do that. That's inappropriate.
The red flags are what's getting me. And I'm coming from a place of, if you've ever been in a relationship and you see another woman texting your husband over and over and over and over and over again, you should be seeing something and kind of going, some of this isn't making sense to me. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're seeing somebody texting your daughter, that shouldn't be making sense to you. Mm-hmm. I don't care if they're in a program like this. They shouldn't be getting multiple texts. That's not a proper form of communication. Again, you've got to follow your gut instinct. If you see something that feels like a red flag, investigate it.
Is it because there's so many people, we base our own experience, we base how we're going to handle our experiences, our new experiences in life, on our own experiences in life? Is it because at a different place in time, in the 70s, in the 80s, 90s, we've been as individuals sometimes close to the fire, if you will, sometimes burned by the fire as well, but sometimes close to it, that we go, well, you know, they're just doing this. It's just that. It's just somebody that wants to help study. And we don't see it because we've lived it, and it worked out okay for us. So what could possibly be weird over here, until you find out more about what that person is truly up to? Maybe we didn't experience the full breadth of what their intentions were with the individuals that maybe we have interacted with in life. So we don't want to believe that there's this type of human being out there that would be doing these sort of things.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's certainly true. It's exactly what I was saying about, you know, the fact that I'm a father, that's my lens, but we also have our life experience lens, right? Everything that we view through the lens of what our experience has been throughout life. So yeah, I think that, and we're, you know, especially folks our age, we're coming out of a much different time. You know, when we were kids, child abuse wasn't really talked about like it is now.
No.
You know? I mean, it just wasn't. And it was, and I'm talking not only physical, but like I say as well, you know, none of it was really discussed. So yeah, I think that's kind of, but that's a little bit of the same argument is, you know, spare the rod, spoil the child type thing. We're like, you know, back in my days, you know, my dad would put me over the knee, you know, and it's like, we don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
So it's like, I mean, we've evolved in terms of being human beings and understanding that our children are nothing more than small adults. They're little people, you know, and they have feelings and they have opinions and all of that matters, you know? So I think we've evolved in the sense that we understand, we have a different understanding of children and how our duty to protect them is heightened because mm-hmm. of exactly what we're looking at here with Birchmore, which is this grooming. And, you know, grooming is a word that a lot of people throw around that I get the sense that people really don't understand the breadth of it, you know, just how deep it runs mm-hmm. and what it is. It's like, it's one of those words that kind of appeared 7 to 8 years ago, you know, and has really kind of been used ad nauseum now to where I don't think that people are getting the full sense of what it is, just how incredibly evil it is, because mm-hmm. you know, the things that you see with any kind of grooming relationship mm-hmm. is that it's always an authority figure, somebody that's in a position to where they can exert authority over another person, whether it's a child, whether it's somebody that's disabled in some way, whether it's a teacher to a student, you know, even in college, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's somebody, I mean, frankly, if you're an employer employing somebody, you know, you can groom them as well as your employees.
Yeah.
Talking about adults. I mean, it's always that position of power where you have the ability to be able to kind of control something that other person does, but that's not what it is. It's not a threat thing. It's this thing where you know, the groomer builds trust and this relationship with the victim.
Yeah.
And usually it's easier for these people, but when it's a child, because children want to trust adults.
Mm-hmm.
No, they're taught to trust adults. They're taught to trust their parents, and their parents are the ones that are raising them. And so I think innately almost they have this trust that they feel for adults. And when you have wicked people out there exploiting that for their own gain. Mm-hmm. And when I'm saying gains, I'm talking about in the worst way possible.
Yeah.
You know, that's how these situations with this grooming occurs. I mean, we talked about it last week with that Aaron Spencer case, man. Mm-hmm. It was the same thing. I mean, that guy was 67 years old.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's like an old man. You know, it's grooming a 13-year-old kid. And if you sit, you know, you're sitting on your couch listening to this, you're like, well, I don't even understand how that happens. Well, exactly.
Yeah. But it happens everywhere, and it happens all the time. And it's not just, you know, it can be anything. It's not just, you know, male and female or female and male. It can be anything at all for whatever that sick person's goals are. And groomers, they're out there, they're grooming away at everything they can do. And I'll share a story here in a minute of an experience I had where it never went to any place far by any means. But when I look back on it, I go, that person was attempting that.
Yeah.
That person was attempting that with me. I was a kid. I didn't realize it till later, till I looked at a headline off of the Associated Press one day and went, huh, I think we know him.
Wow.
And Todd will remember this, maybe.
I knew exactly where you were going with it.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
So back in the day, 96-ish, I'm 14, 15, working at the radio station. We had a nighttime show on. Everybody knows Delilah. It wasn't Delilah that did anything. We had a local guy. We called him the Love Doctor.
Oh, God.
It was like a local version of a love song show. And a lot of radio stations like in the 90s had these sort of things. It wasn't crazy. It was like a very normal type programming for adult contemporary radio in the evening. So you play Michael Bolton and all that shit. Anyway, he pre-records his show. I'm this eager 14, 15-year-old who can't wait to do anything around the radio station. And he comes in to record like once or twice a week for the whole week. And I'm wrapping up my day. I can't drive anywhere yet. Like, hey, you know, when I'm done recording, you know, want to grab McDonald's and I'll drop you off back at home? Sure. I think nothing of it. I'm like, it's another radio guy. He seems nice. And he did. I mean, I did not feel anything weird or creepy about this guy until years later, until I found out what the hell he did to other people. So there were several times we would, you know, we'd go to McDonald's, he'd drop me off. one of the last times he dropped me off, he asked if I could get him. Remember the America Online CDs or discs?
Oh, yeah.
Where it's
like, yeah, like 60 free hours or whatever. Do you got any of those? You got any of those? You know, I'm like, yeah, I think I might. Like, I usually throw them out because we would get them in mass quantity.
Yeah.
He's like, and then he starts to tell me, yeah, you know, I'd like to go and look at, you know, naked ladies on the internet with these. And this is, you know, early internet days, like 97, 98 ish.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, so it's kind of weird that this guy is talking to me about like what he likes to look at, you know, like, okay. And I didn't go and go to McDonald's with him anymore. After that, cause I got a weird vibe. I felt there was something weird about it. Well, about 6, 7, 8 months later, he's not working at the station anymore. We start running Delilah, so there's no need for him. We're sitting at the way the news came in was on the Associated Press computer. We had one computer in the newsroom, and that's where you got news from. And one of the headlines came up, this man's name, arrested. He was also a big brother, you know, as in the program, Big Brothers, Big Sisters. And he was arrested because he was sharing that sort of material with children that were sleeping over at his house.
Wow.
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know any more about what happened after that, but I can tell you, I was thoroughly creeped out. I mean, I didn't know. Did you get any weird vibes off of that guy, Todd? I never really, I don't know. Maybe it was too young.
He seemed really normal, right?
He
great radio guy, seemed really personable, no issues with him. So when that came out, I was like blown away.
Yeah. I mean, and it's scary just how that sort of like nobody saw anything of it. There was another gentleman that some of us worked with or knew of in radio that ended up driving to like what, South Carolina or something to try and meet up. Yeah.
Yep.
He was another one. I had an office next to him in Oshkosh, at Cumulus. And he was a big radio guy known in the market forever. Really just, I never got any weird vibes. And I don't know. I usually think I do get, but maybe I don't. But he was always just kind of like dad-like, nothing creepy, nothing weird. All of a sudden, the guy goes and drives across the country because he's been grooming and having a conversation with a supposed like 13, 14 year old. It was an FBI agent. And there goes the rest of his life. But it's so creepy. I mean, these people are out there and we don't want to admit it. And you don't want to be cautious of every single human being that's just trying to be a decent person around you and your children. Not everybody who's being nice is a predator. But if you don't know the person and you've had a run-in or two with folks like this in your life, it's hard not to be like that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the reality is you have to be.
Yeah.
It's because they exist and they're not so far and few between that it's like we can't just kind of say, oh, well, you know, that's an exception to the rule. Mm-hmm. I don't want to necessarily say it's the rule, but it's kind of the rule, you know, and I've been coaching. I coach my daughter's softball team. And, you know, like even me as a parent, you know, I'm hyper conscious about not doing anything that the parents would construe as being over I've been coaching kids in sports for a long time, and I'm an affectionate guy, and I like to give like hug kids around their shoulder, you know, but it's like, you can't really, and it's a shame because those of us that are good people, that it's important to show kids support and affection like that. You know, that kind of killed it for all of us that aren't creeps.
You have to be hyper aware of the optics.
You really do. Like in every sense, especially if it's male coach to female player.
Correct. You know?
And I would say this, and what I find interesting about that observation, like responsible, non-creepy adults are going to be hyper aware of the optics. Yeah. It's the ones that have zero awareness of the optics and seem to be pushing that line. And you're like, I'm sorry, that seemed like a really weird hug with that 16-year-old over there.
Yeah.
That seemed a little too long.
Right.
They're the ones who have I mean, it's like there is, that is a red flag. If you're not aware of the optics and you're just going to go, well, fuck it, this is how it was back in, well, it's not back in your day.
Right.
We're in a very different place in time. So you better be aware of these optics or you're going to be looked at that. I mean, it's just, it kind of comes with the territory of life of, well, it's not 1988 anymore.
Exactly.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.